Jhené and Golic Jr., the podcast.
The ESPN Radio presented by Progressive Insurance. All of our guests join us on the Shell Penzo Performance Line. And Sarah, you know, it's funny because you and I spend so much time from 7 to 9 p.m., by the way, hanging out on ESPN Radio. Hang out with us. You and I spend so much time in that area talking about college football and COVID and what it's doing to the NFL and what it's doing to the sports landscape in general. And then you have this, like, awakening moment that I think we had about a week ago when we realized, wait a minute, college basketball is still here and happening. And now today, college basketball is here right in front of us. And I got to admit, it still feels strange. Like, to be sitting here wondering how they're going to play college football games this weekend, but at the same time talking about the launch of a new sport, just seems, it feels
weird. We might need some help to do it.
Well, let's get some help now from ESPN college basketball analyst Myron Metcalf joining us on the Shell Penzo Performance Line. Penzo synthetic motor oils are made from natural gas, gives you unbeatable engine protection. The proof is in the Penzo based on Sequence 4A wear test using SAE 5W30. So, Myron, we've talked to you recently, and I mean, I was a little shook after our conversation, realizing how much it has taken even to get to this point. So how surprised are you right now that there are basketball games going on?
Yeah, I mean, it's definitely surprising with all the chatter about maybe they're starting a later season. A lot of coaches advocating for that. And, you know, to see them on the court, last time they were on the court, I remember when COVID sort of canceled everything. So it's cool to see, I'll admit that. But I don't know what tomorrow's going to bring. And I think that's going to be the attitude throughout the entire season. It's great to see teams out there today. I don't know what to expect in the coming days because there have been so many cancellations.
Myron, you did a fantastic job on ESPN Daily with Pablo Torre. One of the most interesting things that I think you talked about was the have and have nots, the differences for teams that are going to be greatly affected partly because of distance, somewhere like Hawaii, where do you just fly in and then stay somewhere for a long time? What about the testing required to fly into Hawaii to play there? And then teams that have a private jet and can get wherever they need to go. Are there certain programs that we normally see succeed that you think are at the biggest disadvantage this season?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's a lot of those bubble schools that, you know, are usually right there on Selection Sunday from some of the non-Power 5 leagues where you go, okay, they're in the mix usually maybe for an at-large bid, but they just had a lot of disruption. New Mexico State is a good example. They had to move to Phoenix because you can't compete in New Mexico right now. And I was talking to their coach, Chris Jansen, and he was saying, I was just happy to get Netflix in my hotel room. And they're in Phoenix for the foreseeable future. They don't even have any games lined up. They're just hoping that somebody calls them and says they need an opponent because their opponent canceled. So they've left the state, and they're trying to figure it all out. Their families aren't with them. So you tell me how that group figures out the next couple of months. So I think there are situations like that that are just going to put them at a disadvantage. I've talked to commissioners who are saying they don't know if they're going to be able to put on a conference tournament. What does that mean for the NCAA tournament? So if you don't have the resources that the Power 5 schools have, you're certainly at a disadvantage going forward.
Myron, I want to follow up on that quickly just because one of the things we talked about months ago when it came to collegiate sports and COVID was a complete disruption of any pretense that these athletes are anything like other student athletes. When you're not even in the state that you go to school in, you don't have any games scheduled, you're just going to play whenever they come up. How does that even work in terms of pretending that those are students? And are there other programs where there's schools actually having class in person, but the students can't go and they just have to make up excuses as to why they still count as regular students?
I mean, that's a good question. I think there are a number of programs on campus. The kids aren't on campus. I mean, a lot of college basketball teams started right now because they were hoping that kids wouldn't be on campus and they'd sort of be alone. But the New Mexico situation is probably the most extreme. New Mexico State had to move to Phoenix. New Mexico moved to Texas because they cannot play basketball in that state. And you're right. I mean, what does it mean to be away from school for a month, 2 months? Who knows how long they'll be gone hoping to play a season, but these are the extremes that teams are going to try to get some games in. It's crazy. I don't know how else to say it.
Myron, one of the things that's been reported is that they've lowered the minimum number of games to be played to qualify for the tournament to 13 total, which is sort of already alarming. But it's not that simple, and you've done a great job breaking it down. Explain to everybody what it will actually take for a team to make the NCAA tournament this year.
Yeah, so you have to play a minimum of 13 games. There are a lot of coaches aren't sure if they'll get there. The 14-day quarantine right now is the NCAA recommendation. That could change. So you're talking about if you get one positive test, you shut down for 14 days. If you get three of those in the next couple of months, that's 6, 7, 8, 9 games you're going to miss. So unlike football where you can play without 20 guys, you can't do that in basketball. So that's the big concern. I talked to a coach who said just because of contact tracing, he has two starters who are coming off 35-day quarantines. He's got a third player who's coming off a 49-day quarantine. Like, this is what college basketball is dealing with behind the scenes. NC Central is playing Iowa right now. NC Central has not practiced in 18 days. Like, that's the stuff that's not being told. These teams aren't prepared. They want positive tests, and you stop everything.
ESPN college basketball analyst Myron Metcalf with us here on the Shell Penzo Performance Line. It's Chinay Ngola Jr., Sarah Spain, Jason Fitz filling in. Heard you talking about Luka Garza. I love that you said he's trying to bring back the sky hook. I will be keeping an eye out for that move. Is he the best player in college basketball heading into this season as it starts today?
Yeah, I mean, he's a force. You know, he averaged 24 games, Sarah, last year. And, I mean, maybe he averages 30-plus. He wants to bring back the skyhook. I've never heard a college athlete say that they were breaking down film of Jack Sigma this summer, but he was. He's like an old-school dude, watching Kareem, watching all these other guys. He wants to bring it back, but he also wants to prove he can play in the NBA. I think that's his goal, too. He wants to prove that he's not sort of this big, big-end center. He wants to prove that he's mobile and athletic and can compete in the NBA.
I mean, that's the real question. Is he maybe the dominant player in college basketball? If you're an NBA fan, are you watching him thinking that he can be dominant in the NBA?
You know, he's going to have to shoot well. You know, he's going to have to be a good defender, not just bigs. He's going to have to be able to switch. But I think he has a chance to play at the next level. He's so strong. He's such a hard worker. And I think he's more versatile than people realize. But that's the goal. But it's hard in a game when you don't really have centers anymore. You don't have true bigs anymore. So he's trying to shake that label a little bit.
Myron, it's been a long time since we saw any of these teams play. And like you said, some guys were back on campus in July, but the practices have been stunted. Is Gonzaga the number one team? And how are we even basing our guesses at the rankings of teams at this point?
Like most years, we just make it up, Sarah. We don't know what's
perfect. Great.
We don't know what's going on.
That's like our show every night. Yeah.
we have no idea. I think Gonzaga's number one. They bring back some talented guys. Corey Kispert. They bring in this kid, Jalen Suggs, out of Minneapolis, who's a really tough five-star prospect. Like, I think Gonzaga's probably number one. I don't know how long that will last. I think you probably have 20 teams in college basketball that can win the national championship. And with all the chaos, who knows who's going to have the momentum even going into the tournament when we have the tournament, which I think will be in March, but you don't know.
Well, I want to sit here and ask you 52 questions about what's going to make UNLV dominate again, Myron, but instead, I'm getting texts while I'm talking to you from multiple people that work for our company that are telling me that you started 0-4 in the Fantasy Football League around here and haven't lost a game since. So, Myron, what's the secret? Because I'm hearing that you had an abysmal draft, started off terrible, now you're killing everybody. Are you good at everything?
Well, the secret is, Jason, to go against the grain. You can listen to those fantasy experts if you want to, but go with my method. Pick quarterbacks early. Do everything you're not supposed to do, and then that's how you go from 0-4 to 7-4. Yes, I have the longest win streak in the ESPN Radio League. I am coming for the championship, and if I win, I will walk around with a belt whenever I'm back in Bristol, no matter what anybody says. That's where I'm at.
I mean, it's inspiring. If anybody can walk around campus with a swagger and a championship belt, it's Myron. So, Myron, we appreciate your time, my friend. Thanks for hanging out with us.
Thank you.
Chinay Ngola Jr., the podcast.
The money's been flowing. Players have moved. The question is, now that the dust is starting to settle from NBA free agency, what are we making of all of it? Who are the winners and losers? It's Chinay Ngola Jr. on ESPN Radio and ESPN Plus. Spain and Fitz filling in. Sarah Spain, Jason Fitz. We're presented by Progressive Insurance, and all of our guests join us on the Shell Penzo Performance Line. We'll go straight there. ESPN NBA insider Brian Windhorst joining us there. Wendy, thanks so much for the time. Happy Thanksgiving early, my friend. We appreciate you hanging out with us. So we were talking last night on Spain and Fitz about sort of the way all of this came together for the NBA and in free agency. And I guess I don't know what I expected, but I for some reason I didn't expect the Lakers to go out and just dominate everybody in free agency as well. Like, how have they made this happen?
Well, I mean, I would think, you know, to me, the most important thing in free agency hasn't happened yet. That's what Giannis does. But, you know, I think if you go back and look, whenever you put a team together with cap space, whether that was the Miami Heat back in 2010, whether, you know, it was the Golden State Warriors after they got Kevin Durant, typically you need a year to be able to rebuild your team a little bit, and you get that second sort of wave of transactions. The Miami Heat weren't champs until they went out and got Shane Battier and Norris Cole, for example. That's what was so remarkable about the Lakers winning the championship last year, is that I didn't think that they had the depth to do it. I thought that they needed another transaction cycle, let them spend their cap space on those guys, and then go add depth. And that's why that championship has put them in such great shape, because now they get this year where they get their exceptions, and they're able to use them on guys like Wesley Matthews, use them on guys like Montrezl Harrell. And then, if you're a championship-level team, especially in the glamour market, you're going to do well usually on minimum contract guys, which they did with Marc Gasol. So some of it was just the cycle of team building. It just happens that they do it walking around with their brand-new gold trophy.
Wendy, they've got that true top two stars, and now they have depth, which makes it all the more important for other teams that want to contend to try to get as close to that as they can. The Bucks don't have a true number two. And what they add in Drew Holiday is nice, but I described it as you pay more than you should for the soda because you want the souvenir cup. And the souvenir cup is, of course, Giannis. It's worth it to give up what you did for Drew Holiday if you get that. Otherwise, you haven't really gotten that much better, especially with the Bogdan deal now dissolving. Do we have anything in terms of whispers coming out of Milwaukee about how the latest moves have affected or not Giannis's decision making?
The Bucks have remained confident. I have to say this, since the day the season ended, they weren't feeling great about everything at that time, but talk to those people. They're like, look, Giannis is not like Kevin Durant. Giannis is not like LeBron. This is a different guy. We believe he's all in with us. We believe he's going to stay. And they have consistently said that. They sort of joke, what are you guys going to talk about for the next year when Giannis re-signs with us? And I say, let's find out. they felt that they had to make an upgrade to Drew Bledsoe. I'm sorry, to Eric Bledsoe.
Drew Bledsoe would be interesting.
And Drew Bledsoe, he gives him
good
nothing.
Good on the breakaway pass, yeah.
They felt like, they were a 60-win team a couple of years in a row. They felt that was the position that they had to make the upgrade on, and they went very aggressively with three first-round picks to go get Drew Holiday, and they feel that that is a major upgrade. Now, do I look at them and say, boy, look at that team and look at what they have with the Lakers, and boy, all of a sudden I think Milwaukee has stepped ahead? No, I don't. But, here's the thing. If Giannis recommits, if Giannis re-signs, whether it's, this weekend or it's in 2 weeks, he has until December 21st, the Bucks get an A++ for this offseason. Not necessarily because I think that they made the greatest moves, but getting that player to stay with you, to give you runway, is as great of an accomplishment as a team like the Bucks can have. They haven't been to the finals since 1974. You could make the argument that the most relevant thing that's happened in the Bucks franchise in the last 40 years is Kareem Abdul-Jabbar saying, I would like to be traded. Now you have the best player you've seen in four decades. You have him potentially saying, I want to stay here. To me, if that trade of Drew Holiday gets them Giannis to recommit, they are the overwhelming winners of the offseason. They got a lot of work to do, but that's what, the value of a superstar like that in today's NBA, that's what it is.
We're talking to ESPN NBA insider Brian Windhorst. It's Chinay and Golic Jr., Spain and Fitz filling in. So stick there for a second. If he doesn't sign, when we look back at this offseason, it's easy for us to say, why didn't the Bucks? But what should the Bucks have done if they wanted to be more aggressive?
Well, I think, getting Bogdanovich would have been a double upgrade, because if you look at the kind of player he is, I don't know if the average NBA fan knows about this guy. And, he wasn't a star in Sacramento, but he's got an incredible track record of being a clutch player in Europe. Whether it was with the national team in Serbia or his Euro teams, pretty sure he led Partizan Belgrade, a Serbian a pro team, to a title in Europe. And he's been great for the Serbian national team. Like, this is the type of guy that will come through in the playoffs. And if you go back and look, the Bucks just didn't have those types of players. And, you know, Bledsoe was one of those guys who didn't. And, you know, you go back and look at Drew Holiday. Drew Holiday at times has been terrific in the playoffs. So their game plan is we wanted to go get some playoff difference makers who we think will be so much better for us, especially a guy like Holiday, who a couple years ago had sort of a legendary series shutting down Damian Lillard and leading the Pelicans to an upset win in that series. And they were hoping to add those two guys. So I look at Holiday and say, boy, they really did a nice upgrade there. They should be really different in the playoffs. And then if it was Bogdanović, I was like, wow, they would have had two. But now I'm like, well, they added a couple of role players. And so, you know, if the Bogdanović thing had never been, you know, been leaked out there, had never been come to fruition, I think we'd look at everything about this Bucks offseason completely differently. But the stakes are so dramatic. And, you know, look, if you just go out there and look, you look what some of these teams have done, their moves have indicated that they are hedging. The way the Raptors, the way the Heat, the way the Knicks, the way the Mavericks have operated this postseason, they're not 100% convinced Giannis is extending it. It's not just, you know, the big bad media out there who wants to see him follow through with it.
You guys can follow him on Twitter at WinHorseESPN. Wendy, as always, we appreciate your time, my friend. Stay safe. Have a wonderful Thanksgiving. Thanks for hanging out with us.
You guys too.
Janae and Golic Jr., the podcast.
Sarah Spain, Jason Fitz filling in for Janae and Golic Jr. on ESPN Radio and ESPN Plus. Fitz, my Menchies are a little bit of a tire fire right now because we didn't specify what the pies should be on the Thanksgiving pie debate, and I did not put sweet potato pie on there because I am transparently white and I have never eaten a sweet potato pie and I always forget they exist. People are not happy.
I mean, so, sweet potato pie is fine. It's just take it out of the pie and it's better. Like just sweet potatoes.
Yeah, just regular sweet potatoes.
Sweet potatoes.
I think it's also a southern thing up here in the Midwest. I don't see a lot of sweet potatoes. I just thought, you know, pecan or pecan.
It's pecan. Sweet. But yeah, we'll agree on pecan. We're not savages here, but you're right. No, that definitely sweet potato pie was like something that really, once I moved to the South, I was like, okay, this is a thing. We're doing this now.
People wanted, you know, banana and cream and everything. I'm sorry about the pies, guys, is what I'm saying here. My bad. let's get into some of the NFL action this weekend. It's a little something that they here on the Janae and Golic Jr. show like to call end zone or friend zone.
As millennials, one of the greatest triumphs in life is watching someone make it out of the friend zone. You're hoping, wishing.
You're strategizing.
And that's what we're going to try and do here this weekend. We want to get everyone ready for this weekend in the NFL.
End zone. Or friend zone.
Let you know who's going to end up in the friend zone or the end zone when it comes to this NFL Sunday.
Friend zone to the
end zone.
I only had one friend zone to end zone. It was you know, one of those things where they played some music and all of a sudden you look at them differently. You know how that works, Fitz.
Oh, yeah. Well, I am a little curious.
Story of your life.
Like, I mean, Chiney and Golic Jr., last time I checked, close friends. Both very single, so I'm not sure what either of them know about getting out.
You're trying to ship a radio show?
I mean, what did they know about getting out of the friend zone? I'm just...
I thought you were trying to put them together. I was like, Fitz, can we just, first of all, HR, and secondly, we don't want to have anybody on the radio show shipping, because if things go wrong, you're still hosted together.
Yeah, no. I'm just saying that, what do they know about getting from the friend zone to the end zone?
Like, I mean,
They're friend zone experts, for sure.
Consistently friend zoned. Now that we've trashed the host of the show.
Perfect.
Let's get to football. Let's start with the Chiefs at the Bucs. We just saw the Bucs suffer a disappointing loss. The Chiefs are rolling, just got past your Raiders. The end zone candidates for me here are the quarterbacks in this game. And what stands out to me, and we talked about this on Spain and Fitz, is Tom Brady was that guy that when you had a couple minutes left and he gets the ball, you always say you left him too much time. We weren't saying that on Sunday. Because he's just not the same Tom Brady. That's not to say he can't still make plays that dazzle and can't lead the team to wins. But the playbook against the Bucs is pretty set. Get pressure on Brady and make him do things that he's maybe not capable of doing as much anymore. On the other hand, we're so used to Patrick Mahomes' greatness that he does what he did against your Raiders and we're all like, yeah, that checks out. Like, no, we weren't losing our minds over that touchdown with, you know, whatever it was, 20 seconds to play with a wide open Kelsey. Yeah, there was a defensive issue there, but he also marched him down the field like he always does. And so I'm end zoning Mahomes in this one. These are just two of the last three MVP quarterbacks, two of the last three players, or two of the only three players in NFL history with 50 passing touchdowns in a season. This is a heavy-duty quarterback matchup.
I don't know what ending of the game you were talking about. I don't remember it.
You missed it? You missed
it? Yeah, let's just go with that. Alcohol is great. All right, so let's go to the friend zone side of this. And look, squarely in the friend zone, although I'm not sure they're friends all the time, I'm putting Byron Leftwich and Bruce Arians in the friend zone in this entire process. And look, when the season started and Brady had signed with the Buccaneers and everybody was asking about, you know, would he be able to do the big, long, dynamic offense of Bruce Arians? And I kept saying at the time, look, that sells Arians short. Like, he's a guru and he's a mastermind and he's going to rework his offense to tool it around what Brady does well. Well, that hasn't happened. And he can say all day long that, you know, Brady is a big part of the calls at the line of scrimmage. That's fine. But it feels like what you have is a little bit of contention between all of them, and it doesn't feel like they've really tailored their play calling to who Tom Brady is. So I find that the Buccaneers aren't maximizing whatever this version of Brady is. So I'm putting Arians and Leftwich squarely in the friend zone, by the way. That's why the Chiefs are going to roll in this one.
Yeah, after that game, when people were comparing the Bucs offense to the Bears, that was your sure sign that they belonged in the friend zone, because the Bears offense ain't getting no love either, if you know what I'm saying. We're moving on to the Titans at the Colts. Let's let you get in the end zone this time, Finley.
Yeah, so, I mean, if we're going to start with end zones, this is all about the AFC South and really what's at stake here. And frankly, this is sort of a revenge game for the Titans. I didn't expect them to get their butts whooped by the Colts, but they did a couple of weeks ago. Phillip Rivers is very hot and very cold at different times in the game. I feel like I was right that he's a problem, and then all of a sudden he's a problem in a good way, and the Colts find their way back in it. So for me, this is all about the end zone, is all about the stakes here, because as we've talked about so much on our show, the wild card battle is so packed in this. I expect the Titans to come out and really make a statement, because if they don't, they're not going to be able to make up the ground with the tiebreaker also belonging to the Colts. I don't think that puts them in the right situation.
I'm going to go ahead and friend zone Phillip Rivers, who's getting a little long in the tooth and long in the bolero. And do you remember last year in the playoffs when all of a sudden we saw Josh McCown out there, and in the middle of the game, this 40-year-old quarterback, they said, oh, he injured himself. It looks like he took a bad step. And the internet exploded with people saying, only does somebody about 40 years and up know what it means to injure yourself just taking a bad step. Well, Phillip Rivers hurt his toe making a block. Potential toe injury. He's going to play. It's likely that he'll play. But the fact that he's old enough to injure a toe on a block and is more likely to have those bumps and bruises as he gets older and mistakes as he gets older, to me, that's a little bit of a friend zone situation. And I'm not even going to make the Mina Kimes face about Phillip Rivers, because I know what happens at this company. When you make the Phillip Rivers face once, it comes back to haunt you over and over and over again. I'm staying away.
Yeah, it was just on the screen for everybody there watching on Plus. There you go. All right, let's go next to the Bears and Packers. We'll pick it up here. The end zone, this one's simple. It's Chicago's defense. They're absolutely incredible. Every time I watch them, I wonder how they haven't won more games with the defensive stars and the defensive capability they have. So I'm all about this one being a matchup of good versus good. So I'm going to take that defense in the end zone.
As I said before, and I will repeat myself, but do it more promptly. The Bears offense and the Bears quarterbacks are getting friend-zoned. We don't even know which one's going to start. They're both hurt. Neither one spoke to the media. And Vegas said, we're not even going to wait to put the lineup on this game until we know who's starting. It doesn't matter whether it's Foles or Trubisky. They gonna lose. So I'm friend-zoning the Bears quarterbacks.
I like that. We got one more. We'll get in here quick. Ravens-Steelers, we're presuming it's going to happen on Sunday. I'm end-zoning Chase Claypool. This was supposed to be the best rookie class we've ever seen for wide receivers. And guess what? The guy not picked in the first round may be the best of them. So 10 touchdowns so far this season. Absolutely incredible work by him.
It's Chenea and Golic Jr. on ESPN Radio, ESPN Plus. Sarah Spain and Jason Fitz filling in here. The friend zone here was supposed to be the end zone. This would have been a positive about this game tomorrow, because we, as we said earlier, had the turkey, the entree, the main dish was going to be this Steelers-Ravens game that's now moved to Sunday. And according to Elias, the 800 combined win percentage for those two teams would be the highest entering a game played on Thanksgiving since 2011. Packers and Lions had an 850 win percentage, and the 49ers-Ravens an 800 back in 2011. This game postponed. It was our only good Thanksgiving game, and now we're left with trash. So I'm friend-zoning all of that.
Janae and Golic Jr., the podcast.
my favorite video is back. That means it's Thanksgiving. It's Thanksgiving Eve, in fact. We got lots of Thanksgiving debates to get to. Sarah Spain, Jason Fitz filling in for Chenea and Golic Jr. on ESPN Radio and ESPN Plus. Chenea and Golic Jr. reminding you that Peyton's Places is back for season two. The Emmy-nominated series returns this Sunday, November 29th, with 15 new episodes as Manning takes you on a journey through football's most iconic moments, exclusively on ESPN+. Sign up now at ESPNplus.com. Fitz, before we get into this Thanksgiving stuff, a quick update on Steelers-Ravens that you had 1 p.m. Sunday?
Yeah, so it looks like the game will be on at 1 p.m. on Sunday, and as a result of that decision, Collinsworth and Al Michaels will still call it, and now Tirico and Tony Dungy will handle the call on the Sunday night game. So both games will still be on NBC, and they'll get that all figured out for us.
So which is only silver lining of having something to watch Sunday night that's better than when my Bears get thrashed by the Packers has been foiled.
Well, and like there were already like six or seven games at 1 o'clock. Like I know the NFL does this for smart reasons, but I always scratch my head when there's like 87 games early and then two games at 4 o'clock. Like it's the worst as a Raiders fan when you sit in the bar and you're like, oh, back when we were in sports bars, and you're sitting in a sports bar and then you're like, yeah, I watched all the early games. Now let's all watch my everybody
two
leaves.
Left. Yeah. Yeah, well, 2020 strikes again as that Steelers-Ravens game was going to be the highlight of tomorrow's slate. Instead, we get Washington football team, the WTFs, and the Cowboys, and we get the Lions and Texans. So we asked you if the Thanksgiving, the main dish, was the game that we're no longer getting. What are the struggle sides that represent the two games we are getting tomorrow? And you guys had some really good answers. You wanted to be a part of the Chenea and Golic Jr. Nation. Hitting us up on the Dr. Pepper Twitter feed was at jdizzle635. Washington-Dallas is the burnt dressing that Aunt Linda dropped cigarette ashes in. Houston-Detroit is a plate of deviled eggs that's been sitting at room temperature for 8 hours.
Deviled eggs.
You nailed it.
Like deviled eggs suddenly sound very good. Ugh, like that wasn't on my plan,
you.
But now, oh.
I can only do omelets and scrambled. I can't do anything where the white and the yellow part are separate or like not cooked or like, ugh. No, thank you. At GH Shade said, lumpy mashed potatoes and watery gravy. Those are absolutely the sides that those games are. At JRZ Browns fan, shook our world, Fitz, with the photo that he presented of something that appeared to be beans and peaches. I don't know what would drive someone to combine beans and peaches in a lumpy, coagulated mess, but that was what we got, and I feel like that's what we're getting tomorrow.
I kind of blame the entire family for this one. Like, somebody owes it to them. Like, at some point, you've got to go in and say, hey, this doesn't work, and we're not going to do it anymore. It's no longer a family tradition.
That's right. You have sullied our beautiful table with whatever this is, and you're going to have to go ahead and take that and yourself home.
I just keep imagining
what you've done next year.
Like Michael Scott in the office just screaming, no, the minute it gets to the plate.
Exactly.
It's just over and over again.
Absolutely. Meanwhile, we had what we consider about the top five Thanksgiving debates. Notice one of them is gravy aside or a condiment slash sauce, because everyone knows it's a sauce not a side dish.
A side.
So when Jason Fitz puts it at his number one Thanksgiving side on his ranking show, we have nothing to do but shake our heads at the stupidity. And then you did say that tomorrow you were going to post a video of you drinking your gravy.
Yeah, I'm just going to eat it with the spoon. I'm going to eat it with a spoon. Yeah,
like, I prefer if you drink it. I mean, I will allow it.
If I drink it, then it's a drink, but it's a side. I mean, like I said to you on air, when you go into Kentucky Fried Chicken, you order a side of gravy.
Okay.
So, you know.
Can we find a compromise and you eat it with a fork? Because I'd like to watch that.
Yeah, I can eat it with a fork.
Bowl of gravy.
Oh,
let's see how long it takes you with a fork.
Well, I don't eat the whole bowl of mashed potatoes, but I will eat a more than you know appropriate amount of it. Yeah.
All right, well, I'll tell you what you say about that. Leftovers are for quitters. So I don't know why you wouldn't eat the whole bowl of mashed potatoes. It's Chenea and Golic Jr., Sarah Spain, Jason Fitz, fill in. Here's the top debates that we did tackle, and you guys helped us out on Twitter. Do you call it stuffing or dressing? 85% of you said stuffing. Many of you pointed out what we said, which is it depends whether you stuff it in the bird or not. Either way, no matter how you cook it, I'm always calling it stuffing, not dressing. Dressing is the animated ranch dressing that someone put lounging in our timeline.
That to me, like, I want to know if that was actually Mike Golic Jr. in a costume at a photo shoot, because it has that sort of dojo feel to it. I mean,
it
I'm all
does.
In for that, yeah.
That might be his Halloween, or it has a little bit of Bring It On Down to Omeletteville. It had a little bit of that vibe, too. We might be seeing Justin Timberlake dressed as that ranch bottle in a future episode of SNL. Do you call them sweet potatoes or yams? 88% of you said sweet potatoes. 12% said yams. One of you said they're different things. And I'm so sorry, but that is not the case. Yams and what you call yams are actually a part of the sweet potato family. Sorry to break that to you if you were unaware. But 88% of you are right in calling them all sweet potatoes. Cranberry sauce, canned or from scratch? Many of you said in the trash, which I agree with, but 60% of you said canned if you're going to eat it, which is wild.
I mean, if you're going to eat it, you don't want it to be lumpy, right? Like, if you get the real kind, then it's got, like, you got to chew it.
I'd rather have a lumpy from scratch than whatever that coagulated mess is.
It's just, again, you open the can, you wiggle, you jiggle,
ooh,
flops out,
no,
and then you just suck it on down.
I hate all of what you just said.
Thank you.
Actually, that reminds me. I don't know if we have the sound, but guys, let me know if we have the sound of Janae and Golic Jr. attempting to have a conversation about white versus dark meat.
I you know what? I might blindly be hitting this. Do we have that? I don't know. I'm going to get a thumbs up or a thumbs down. We're going to try this.
Trying to wait for outside forces to bail us out is kind of how I feel like the sports calendar is going.
Nope, that's it. That's the wrong
one. That's not it. All right. Well, how about do we have our conversation about tree girth? Because that approached some weird territory as well.
God, it's not proud of that. Okay, yes, that we do have, and that is this.
The better shape for a Christmas tree. Is it tall and skinny or tall and girthy? And, a brilliant 89% of you are wise enough to know tall and girthy. At KM Woodkey said, LMAO, what are you doing to me? She was one of many that thought perhaps we weren't talking about trees. We were talking about trees. We were. Huh. We were talking about trees, and Chanae and Golic Jr. were talking about turkey meat. That's it. That's it. And Fitz is talking about cans of cranberry sauce. Turkey or ham for your Thanksgiving main? 80.5% of you said turkey. Very wise. Ham is for Christmas. And the pies, I'm still ashamed. 41% said pumpkin, 33% said apple, 25% said pecan/pecan. And many of you chastised me for being white and from the north and not being aware that I should very clearly have sweet potato pie. So I'm gonna go out and venture out this weekend. I'm going to find some. I'm going to have it. I'm going to tell you how it is. And my apologies, my deepest apologies. It's Chanae and Golic Jr. Jason Fitz is going to tell us everything we need to know about the initial college football playoff rankings coming up next, including, should anybody really be mad? It's the first rankings. I mean, we always need a reason to be mad. It's all coming up next. Chanae and Golic Jr.
Chanae and Golic Jr., the podcast.